You are listening to Inverse Otaski, the Atari 8-Bit Productivity Podcast. Season 4. Episode 2. Overview.
Hello and welcome back. Today's featured product is the first excellent word processor, which, if you didn't guess by its name, is a word processor. This one is best introduced with an excerpt from the manual, which I'll read right now. Congratulations on your purchase of the first excellent word processor. This is the first time Excellent Software has released a program that can be directly compared to others on the market. In the past, we have given you a unique, powerful applications such as Typesetter that have no equal. However, we think this is the best word processor for your Atari. It is powerful and full-featured, yet a breeze to use. Powerful enough for us to write the manual, yet simple enough for personal letters. Don't be overwhelmed by the number of features. They are there so that you'll never outgrow this word processor. In keeping with our goals, we have given you a powerful tool at a reasonable price. Congratulations again for purchasing the first word processor good enough for us to put our name on. And that's what this episode is about, so let's find out if it lives up to its billing. We'll start off with a little bit about the publisher. There's not a lot of information out there, so you'll have to bear with me if it seems kind of short. Excellent Software was a company based in Springfield, Virginia, and it was rather short-lived from the 1985 timeframe to 1988. The president was Linda K. Caboto Barnes, and the vice president was Michael C. Barnes. Jennifer Brabson was the art director. The software development manager was Richard Ronley. I hope I pronounced that last name correctly. And one of the programmers was Randy Dellinger. Some of the other programmers were Lynn Dorfman and Dennis Young and Patrick Delara. The Excellent Software name still exists today, but it's a Nevada-based company, and I don't think it's the same or even another incarnation of the same company. The one that exists today deals with ZOS, mainframe, security software.
There is a link in the show notes if you are interested.
And now a little bit about the author of this software. David Castell was a student in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada.
Take off, A. Uhauser.
He was also the president of his local Atari users group. David had owned an Atari 400 since 1981, but at the time this was published, he also had a 130XE and a 520ST.
Cue the 1632 Atari podcast.
David had written a couple of video games intended for commercial release. Unfortunately, by the time the first game was finished, it was already outdated by games with better graphics. The second game, which boasted better graphics, was finished in the midst of a video game's declining popularity.
That must be the Great Crash of 83.
So both games gathered dust in his disc case. It was at this point he gave up trying to conquer the elusive video game mart and started concentrating on writing a word processor and several utilities. One of the utilities was accepted by Analog Magazine, but had yet to be published when this word processor was released. Some of his other programs made it to public domain, and others never made it out of his disk case at all. As of this release, David was writing programs on the 520ST, but he still planned on continuing programming on the 130XE as well.
Technical data.
First Excellent Word Processor was released in 1985, with version 2.1 following in 1986. We've already talked about the publisher, who is Excellent Software, and that's X-L-E-N-T. And the programmer is David Castell. It does not require BASIC, and it was shipped on a disk, which was not copy protected, and it required 48K of memory. The selling price was amazingly low at $29.95. And today that would set you back a mere $68.67. This software supports a joystick as well, and you can use this to navigate a document and also in the menu selection. For the manual, it was printed on 5.5 by 8.5 inch paper, double-sided in black and white. It was spiral bound and 64 pages cover to cover. The front cover is mainly black and white. In the upper two-thirds, there is a light gray piece of notebook paper. In the upper half of that is a program title and author in large text using two different fonts. The first font is in black thin letters and says "The First Excellent" at the top, and then "By David Castell" at the bottom. The second font appearing between the previous two lines is in larger red and white fancy lettering and says "Word Processor" across the two lines. In the bottom left corner of the notebook paper, in red letters, it says "For the Atari 130XE and 48K Home Computers." Well, that's what my copy shows anyway, and I think it's 2.1 version. My copy also includes a single sheet-sided flyer in black and white of the same size promoting the software. The manual does not include any screenshots or any tutorials. It's written well, though, for the most part, and there are a couple parts that can be confusing, but you'll get through it. The manual also includes a word on piracy, since the disk is not copy protected. Quote, "All the staff of Excellent Software are computer users. We know that having copy protected programs can be a royal pain in the temple. Looking to our legitimate users' needs first, we have decided to not copy protect the First Excellent word processor. This means you will be able to make a backup copy of the program. This is what we have done for you. Here is what we ask you to do for us. Please do not give away copies of the program to anyone. Not only is this stealing, but it deprives David and Excellent Software from making a modest profit of the program. If the thin line of modest profit disappears, then Excellent might follow suit, and David might return to the cave from which he appeared. Seriously, pirating hurts the entire computer community. Your honesty and support is appreciated." End quote.
Crap. Where can I send money?
Well, at least my copy is legit. For the packaging, I'm not 100% sure on this. Many of Excellent's products were packed in a 6x9-inch vinyl folder with the disc on the front cover inside sleeve and the manual in the back cover inside sleeve. My copy does not have the said vinyl folder, and nor do I think it would fit in one because of the spiral binding. I also couldn't find any pictures of it.
Usage notes.
Okay, when booting after the RAM disk on the 130XE, you can press any key to interrupt the load and bring up the options menu. This menu includes a choice of loading the word processor, a micro screen picture formatter, and a printer driver construction utility. All right, before we get too far into this, let's talk about the memory sizes on different equipment. For version 1 on an 800 with 48K, you're left with 18,024 bytes free. Running version 1 on an XL, you have 28,774 bytes free. Running version 1 on an XE, you end up with 28,630 bytes free. Although you can get back to the 28,774 that the XL provides if you disable the RAM disk. For version 2.1 on an 800, you can actually get 18,257 bytes free, which was slightly better than version 1. And on the XL, you get 28,968 bytes free, again, slightly better than version 1. And on an XE with 128 or 192K, it doesn't really matter, you can get 28,824 bytes free, which is slightly worse than the XL, but you can get the same XL version again, or the same XL amount of memory again, by disabling the RAM disk. The word processor's screen is broken up a little bit. At the top of the screen is a tab line or ruler, and then there are 20 lines of the edit window, and the last four lines of the screen are the command window. The command window has status messages and prompts on the left side, as well as a copyright at the start. On the right side are six icons, three across and two different rows. The top row from left to right is a P icon for print, then a camera icon for copy, then a scissor icon for cut. The bottom row from left to right is a bottle of paste icon for paste, then a glasses icon for search, and last a floppy disk icon for disk utilities. I guess the magnifying glass for search hadn't made its way into software at this point in time. To get to the menu, you press escape or you use the joystick button. On an XL or XE, you can also press the help key, which will bring up a help screen. On the 800, which doesn't have a help key, you can press Control-Shift-H. All right, let's talk a little bit about the program's functions or features. First, we have editing. With editing, you got a full suite of the standard fare functions that you would expect. There's word wrap on hyphen and space. You have sophisticated selectable carriage return or line feed. And this is useful if you have two different computers that share a printer. There's single pass double column printing and dual passes available too for stubborn formatting commands. You also have file insert, document comments, widow and orphan control, a soft hyphen, verbatim bytes, and a word count. For text formatting, you have things like margins, automatic indent, physical and logical page length, forced page eject, conditional new page, based on how many lines are left on the page, line spacing, text centering, text justification, page numbering, line feeds, why not just press return, a dividing line, an offset directive, and hard space. There is a split window mode, but it doesn't split the screen. Instead, it allows you to toggle between two files in full screen mode. This is both a blessing and a curse. There's also print preview, and it is in 80 columns. You have block functions such as cut, paste, and save to file. You also have search and replace, and also search and delete. The search string, though, is limited to 30 characters. It does support a wildcard of asterisk for a single character. And one nice thing about the search and replace is you can also use it just to search. You don't have to use the replace. And I like that because you don't have to remember two commands, one for find and one for search and replace. Next is document marks. These serve as shortcuts to locations in your text, but it's limited to 5 per document. So kind of think of them as a bookmark. It also supports headers and footers, though these are limited to 1 line each. The program supports file chaining, so you can include one file at the end of another. And it has a disk file preview as well. And this lets you view contents of a file that's on disk without modifying or losing the document that's currently in memory. It basically prints to the screen. Then it has printing functions, which seem obvious. This supports partial document printing as well as multiple copies. You can print to the screen and a disk file if you so desire. There is a caveat with this program. Instead of lining the print head up with the top of the paper like you normally would, you line it up about 1 inch down the paper where you want the printing to actually begin. This was done to reduce the chance of a sheet feed paper from slipping or jamming because the print head is too close to the top of the paper. So a neat idea, but it takes some getting used to. And one feature about First Excellent Word Processor is that it supports graphics printing, but you must have an Epson compatible printer for this to work. Anything else and you'll need to embed the graphic code yourself. Pictures can be embedded anywhere in the text, and it supports uncompressed images, such as BGraph and Excellent Software typesetter icons. You also have the option to print the entire image or just part of it, with various formatting options like condensed or reversed image. This also supports mail merge, and the mail merge utility supports the Synapse software SynFile Plus format in addition to its own. Then there are some DOS functions that are included, and this is indicated by the floppy disk icon referenced earlier on the menu. And those functions are directory, which can display 40 file names maximum on the screen, load, which loads a file into memory, and there are 3 options, which are normal, to erase memory and load the file, append, which adds the file to the end of the existing memory, and insert, which loads the file into the current cursor's location in your document. You have save, which obviously saves your file to disk, and you have the option of saving the entire file or just a part of it. That's kind of a neat feature here in this program, just being able to save parts of things. You also have delete, which deletes a file on disk, and format, which you can use to format a disk. There's another feature here called spool, and this is the one that lets you display the contents of a disk file directly on the screen without affecting what's in the editor memory. So if you want to, say, reference another document without having to load it, then you can use spool to view that, find what you're looking for, and then return to editing your document. If you need any more DOS functions than that, press Control D from the DOS menu and you'll exit out to the real DOS. And if there's a memsave file working, you can press reset and return to editing. So on the disk also is the printer driver construction utility, and you'll need to break out your printer manual for this. It lets you build custom printer configurations for use within the program. And I don't think I'm going to cover the microscreen picture formatter. Okay, the files on the disk. Both 1.0 and 2.0 use Atari DOS 2.5 and only support two disk drives. You can, however, substitute whatever DOS you want and use a RAM disk. So the first file on the disk is autorunsys, and that's the main loader program. Then there's editor.sys, and this is the XL and XE version of the word processor. There is print.sys, which is the text formatter for the XL and XE version. This is the guy that actually does your printing. And then there's the word processor, which is wordpro.obj, and this is the 400 and 800 version. Then you have driver.mkr, which is the print driver construction utility. And you have picture.mkr, which is the microscreen picture formatter. There's a file called help, which has the help screen information. And helpm65.src, which is the MAC65 source code for the help. There's also driver.sys. And this is the printer configuration, the actual driver, and it's used by both the 800 and the XLXE versions of the word processor. Then there's printset.sys. This is the printer special character access, and it's used by the XLXE version of the word processor. And then there are several FNT files, which are alternative fonts that you can use.
Fun factoids.
Okay, first of all, this won an Outstanding Product Award from Mantic in May of 1987. Two, which has already been referenced, this manual for the product was written with the product. Three, on an XL and XE, the menu icons blank while you're searching. And this is because the icons and the international character set cannot be displayed at the same time. This was done so that the search function could search strings with international characters. Four, the back cover of the manual has a caricature of the excellent staff. It's titled Presenting the Excellent Staff and shows 11 different Halloween-themed cartoon characters, at least by my count. It also has a note underneath that says, not pictured, Jennifer Brabson. And last, which probably should have come first, in January of 87, this word processor received an Antic Award from Antic Magazine for being one of the best word processors with numerous unique and useful features. And that's 4 months before receiving the Outstanding Product Award in Antic in May of 87.
Not 4 months earlier, almost 2 years later. Summary.
As I always do, I use the software in the production of this episode, specifically to take my notes. One thing that can be annoying is the inconsistent application of the commands between the 800 and the XLXE. The 800 uses control, where the XLXE uses option. It's not a big deal, but if you started with an 800 and moved to the XLXE, you might have some retraining to do. And during my testing, as I was trying out the different versions across the different machines, I kept struggling with remembering which one I needed to use. So this program implements the proper use of the escape key, in my opinion. In the program, just like with Paperclip, which I reviewed in the last episode, escape is the operation abort key for practically every function. It will also back you out of menus sequentially. On a side note, there's an interesting use of the break key. The break key will move the cursor to the start of the next line. While we're talking about keys, the inverse key is used to invoke text alignment mode. There are a couple of ways to track memory usage while using the word processor. You have a large document? Check to see if there's enough disk space and save it.
In 125 byte sectors.
If you would rather see free memory in bytes, yes, that's me, you have that option too. The only downside is that it's not readily displayed all the time, requiring a key sequence to view it. But that's not a big deal and easily overcome. Tracking memory becomes especially important when you're splitting the editing window for two documents. Each window is given half of the system's memory. If you have a particularly long document, when you invoke the split window, it is possible to truncate the document. Today, systems have more memory than they need, and word processors have robust multiple document windowing. My Mac has 16 gigabytes of memory, for example. That's enough memory to hold the complete 48K memory banks of 349,525 Ataris. So I don't have any worries about running out of document memory here. And speaking of memory, rather small copy-paste buffer exists with just 800 bytes. This is basically one screen of text. It's probably because of the feature I'll mention in the like section shortly. And you can work around this, though, with some patience. Though today, it's not uncommon to cut and paste several pages of text or even whole documents in modern word processors, or rather the operating systems themselves, which handle it with ease. When you're ready to print, there's a section in the manual that tells you how to integrate with Excellent Software's Megafont, should you wish to print your documents with more flair than the standard dot matrix font. One thing to note, though, is that you must remove character styling instructions, like bold, prior to doing so. The manual even tells you how to print to a serial printer by printing to a file and using the DOS CopyMan to copy it to the printer. The first Excellent word processor, while having plenty of features, falls down a bit in its implementation of text formatting. The way it's done is you enter ASCII text commands on a formatting line. Doing it this way allows documents created with this word processor to be read by virtually any other editor or word processor, and likewise loading virtually any other file. But the command structure can be a little complex and confusing. The manual in this area can be helpful and also a bit confusing at the same time. Mess one up and it ignores the whole line. I like many of the other word processors' formatting commands that embed a binary into the text. Along those lines, the character styling is done using special codes, or you could use the send bytes function on a formatting line to turn styles on and off. I'd forego the ability to read the document in another program for the ease of use of reading or implementing the special codes in this one. One thing that was unique was the ability to skip text while printing. You can set a marker on a section of text, and then when printing, this section will be skipped. This is useful if you want to remove something from print but retain it in the document. Another pseudo-neat trick was the inclusion of a print spooler for the 130XE. With it, you can print and edit a document at the same time. Yes, you heard me right. This is installed as an auto-run file on the disk at boot time. Due to how the Atari works, it will periodically freeze when the spooler sends data to the printer. So it's somewhat useful if you're patient and can tolerate an interruption of your workflow. So, in other words, it can print in the background while you continue to edit a document. And I think one of the neatest features of this word processor is the ability to load and edit a custom font. Excellent provides one called Perfect. It is basically like the standard font, but uses one more pixel at the top and bottom of the character. The standard Atari font uses 6 of the vertical pixels. This one uses 7. It makes the text slightly easier to read, but not quite as easy as the 8x10 font used by Paperclip and SpeedScript. Does one pixel make a difference? Surprisingly, it does. In addition, you can load any other standard font that you want. So, what did I like about this? Well, first off, it inverses the text when you define a block of text, making it super easy to identify the section. Oddly, not for the block delete, though. Today we have colored highlights depending upon the word processor in use, which makes it even easier to identify sections. Next, here's a neat trick, an editable cut and paste buffer. That's right, an editable cut and paste buffer. Next, you have double column printing, and this is often overlooked in word processors of that era. This can do it in a single pass, and some formatting commands require dual passes, though, which is also supported, and double column printing is only available on the 130XE. And the last thing that I really liked about this is the 80 column print preview that's actually legible. When you invoke this, a little printer appears on the screen, and the lower portion of the screen is a page of paper, and you'll notice a small print head at the bottom. It prints to the page portion as the printhead moves back and forth, just like a printer, but much slower. The text is actually easy to read, but character styling's not depicted on the page. What did I not like about this? Well, while I did like the 80 column print preview, I actually don't like the 80 column print preview. So though it's rendered graphically, it doesn't display expanded or condensed print or any other character styles like bold or italics. Next, you can't save your customizations to the program like your cursor speed, the shape, screen colors, etc. So if you prefer a blue screen with white text or a black screen with white text, then you're going to have to set those every single time you open the program. Next, inserting text at the beginning of a large document can be slow. They do provide an easy workaround, which is to insert some blank lines, change to typeover mode, then insert the text. Just make sure you insert enough blank lines first. And the next one is text formatting command system. This was too cumbersome overall, and I didn't enjoy trying to learn it. And last for the dislikes is, while loading a file was fast, saving one was rather on the slow side if you're overwriting the existing file. From a 1985-1986 perspective, would I use it? Well, it depends. It was the right price at the time, and if I was on a budget, it would make a good choice. If I had enough money, I'd invest in one of the other word processors, such as Paperclip. From a retro perspective, would I use it? Probably not. While it's a pretty good word processor, there are others out there that are just a bit better. Paperclip, for one, is a better choice. For a bit rating, I'm going to give this a bit rating of 7, a high 7 at that. It's a pretty decent word processor and has several unique features. It works well where it needs to and is generally easy to use. It could have been an 8 if the dislikes, specifically what the dislikes are, were not present. In any case, it would have been a great value for the money.
News.
So it did have just one little bit of news. The program is no longer on Stitcher. I pulled it off of there before the start of season 4. I forgot to mention that in the last episode. Basically, I was only getting maybe one listen off of it, so that was not really worth me trying to maintain it, and I really didn't like their licensing anyway. So sorry about that, whoever was listening to it. They're still available on iTunes and still available from the website, though. The other piece of news I wanted to mention, if you have not been following on Facebook, I have created or have gone through at least 5 episodes of content research. Well, mark that 4 now because I just recorded this one. So I do have some in the bucket here ready to go. And the next episode is going to have something exciting in it. So stay tuned. And I hope that you continue to enjoy it. Thank you.
You forgot to mention that you're not participating in Extra Life this year. In your absence, listeners should donate to Rob, or rather Ferg, from the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast, instead. There is a link to his donation page in the show notes. Go Ferg. Listener feedback.
I did receive a bit of feedback from the first episode of season 4, and I'll start with that. Okay, first is from Lord Thag via Atari Age, and he says, "Nice work. I really enjoy your podcast. Paperclip was what I wrote on back in the day." Sorry, Ferg. The next is from Yucha via Atari Age, and I hope I pronounced the name correctly. Says, "Excellent episode. I will try to keep up with your work. Regards." Thank you both. I appreciate the feedback, and I'm glad that you're enjoying the show. The next is Glenn from Facebook, and he says, "So that's what they used to write that movie. I think it was a 130XE, and he's referencing the picture of Bob Gale writing on Paperclip, and indeed it does look like a 130XE on the desk there. And whether or not that's actually Paperclip in use, or he's writing Back to the Future in that particular shot, that's what the picture where I found it said that it was, so hopefully it is, and hopefully it's accurate. If not, and somebody has otherwise other information, please let me know, and I'll correct it." Next is Herb from Facebook, and he says, "Yes, I got a cracked dongle-free copy of this from a friend late in my high school days and used it for the last few months of school. It was fantastic. Ironically, that cracked copy still boots up today on real hardware." Yeah, this is a pretty good piece of software, or Paperclip was a pretty good piece of software. So far, of all the ones that I've done, this is one of my favorites. I toggle back and forth between this one and SpeedScript for the ease of reading on the screen because of the 8x10 fonts, but Paperclip had more features than SpeedScript. It was also easier to use, I think, a little bit because the commands were easier to remember. And last is Eric via email. And he says, I just got the chance to listen to Season 4, Episode 1 on Paperclip. And as for roll call, I can certainly say an enthusiastic here, although tardy would be probably more apt. Thanks for the great episode. Paperclip was the word processor I used the most on the 8-bits. I did most of my school reports in Paperclip, and I love it. I think the Atari version was quite different from the Commodore versions. The Commodore Paperclip relied on commands beginning with a period to do things like set margins, i.e. .lm10 for set the left margin at position 10. Something from the ancient Unix ROF trough programs and carried on in programs like WordStar. I guess Paperclip was copying WordStar and not ROF. The Atari version seems quite different. Thanks for the shout out on the show. I still hope to do a podcast or blog, and I'll have to put it on the list of New Year's resolutions. Keep up the great work and welcome back. Hey, thanks again, Eric. I do look forward to listening to your music podcast or reading about your music blog. Hopefully you'll have audio samples on it if it's in blog form. And I'm glad that you're still considering doing it. So as far as Paperclip goes on the Commodore, it's interesting to hear that. I had no idea what the feature set was on the Commodore. And if it is using the dot commands, that simply stinks. This is one of the things that I didn't like about First Excellent Word Processor for setting some of the formatting.
There is also a fresh arrival. This one is from Tom, via Atari Age private mail. He says, quote, I just wanted to say, thank you for taking the time to make the Inversa Task Key podcast, end quote. I can speak for both of us when I say, thank you. Special thanks.
So who should I thank this time? I guess I'll thank the letter F for First Excellent Word Processor. Or maybe I'll have to thank the letter X. Which should it be? I guess I'll thank the letter X for excellent. I also want to thank you, the listener, for continuing to listen to this podcast and support my endeavor. And I have to thank WizWars for releasing the excellent tune 8-Bit Raceway, which I include as part of the show music. Thanks again, everyone.
Contact information.
You can email me, Wade, with wade@inversatasky.info or inversatasky@icloud.com, or you can use the contact form on the Inversatasky website, which happens to be inversatasky.info. You can find Inversatasky on Twitter with @inversatasky, and you can find Inversatasky on Facebook with facebook.com/inversatasky. You can also find Inversatasky on iTunes and at some point Google Play.
And you thought the episode content was going to be too short. By the way, I like the Halloween costume you picked. Goodbye.